better off.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back to A Pod of Their Own. This is episode 171 of A Pod of Their Own. I am Allison McCaig, and I am joined this week by my lovely co-hosts, Linda Sarovich. Hello, Linda.
Hey, Allison.
And Maggie Wiggin. Hello, Maggie.
Hi, Allison.
So we appreciate you listeners for bearing with us as we took our very own all-star break last week and didn't have a podcast. So we are back, first, second half pod. As it so happens, last week would have been kind of the best week to record a podcast, maybe all season, and the only good week to record a podcast.
I think we'll get another good week.
Yeah, maybe one more
good another week. Good week.
Maybe. We'll
sure.
See.
I'm going out on a limb. We will get a whole week where it's not horrible.
Mankey's bold prediction.
Wow.
My bold second half prediction.
Let's go. we should set like over-unders, or not over-unders, but like lines on like what.
I mean, under. Definitely under.
No, I don't even mean over-unders, like, but just like set betting lines on like which week of the season it will be. Or like, I guess over-unders on like before August 31st, after August 31st, like when will the good week be?
Oof. Yeah, I'll have to think about that. I'll have to look at the schedule. Yeah,
I'm going to say the week I'm away from on vacation, so I don't enjoy
that's,
it.
When are that's the, always a good week to pick.
When are the Phillies back in town?
Ooh, yeah, true. I don't know.
All right.
But
yeah, no, that was the week.
Yeah. Since we last recorded a podcast, which was like right before like July 4th, the Mets had a 6-game winning streak during that time. But then they this was heading into the break, but then they lost 4 straight games, the final 2 games of the Padres series right before the All-Star break and the first 2 games of the Dodgers series after the All-Star break, before finally salvaging the series finale against the Dodgers in extra innings yesterday as we record this on Monday. So I'm talking about Sunday. So things were feeling good. It seemed like the Mets were back, baby. Like, maybe they could put a little bit of a run together. Like, obviously, they were still, even after the 6-game winning streak, pretty far out of contention. I think at the peak, they were like 5 or 6 games out of the wild card when they had won those 6 games in a row. But it was like, at least like you could squint your eyes and see it for a bit. It was like they swept a Diamondbacks team that had been performing quite well. And they, you know, they kind of took it to them. They handled them pretty well. And then right away, it was almost like, no, no, no. These are the 2023 Mets. You forget.
I feel like they never beat the Padres, though.
Yeah, true. Even when the Padres are also equally disappointing as the
I
Mets
feel like
this
we've,
season.
We've been playing a lot of the equally disappointing teams.
And when it turns out,
no, it's not equally.
No,
it's yeah. Unequal.
Yeah. I mean, and the vibes started off great against the Padres. Luckily, and more of this later on my walk-off win. Luckily, they won the first game of the series, which was the one game I attended on Friday. And it was like a really fun game. Like, they won in extra innings. It was exciting. But you did see, like, you know, bits and pieces of the 2023 Mets that we know at this point rearing their ugly heads during that game.
You did almost say that we know and love.
That we know.
Yourself.
That we know and hate. They played very bad defense in that game. They were kind of lucky to pull it out in extras. There were a couple of things that broke right for them, like that funny Tommy Pham deke of Haesung Kim that like kind of was lucky for them, and they won in spite of themselves. And then the final 2 games of the Padres series and the first 2 games of the Dodgers series, particularly the Saturday game, were absolutely disastrous. Just horrible baseball.
Yeah. Bucks best either.
Right. Terrible. Just terrible in every sense.
Every aspect.
Terrible managing. Although, like, you know, the pitching's been fine. The starting pitching's been better. Now, Verlander did walk 6 batters against the Dodgers, but they didn't score any runs. So, like, I can't get too upset. And, like, Justin Verlander's final line was ultimately fine. Obviously, you want more than fine from Justin Verlander, but the offense didn't show up. And Scherzer pitched great. you know, the offense didn't show up. They almost Senga lost.
Senga was also great.
Senga was also great. Like, the starting pitching is figuring itself out. You know, like, Carrasco had a great start in his last start. Like, the starting pitching is actually looking okay, which has been the thing that's been their issue all year. Of course, the second that the starting pitching kicks itself into gear, they stop hitting. And it's like, this is what it's been with this team all year. They can never do everything right at the same time. They do one thing well and everything else poorly. And that's just the way, that's how bad baseball teams play. Like, even bad baseball teams can look good at a thing on occasion. But yeah, it's just, it's not good right now. It's bad.
I just feel Saturday's game was a microcosm of the season in a whole. Like, the embarrassing defense, the bad managerial decisions, the no offense, but
bad relief pitching.
Yeah, bad relief pitching.
From the non-Robertson contingent of the bullpen.
I had a recap big game, and it was brutal. I was so cranky watching it.
I recapped Friday's game, and it also was not. I mean, it wasn't quite as bad as Saturday's game, but recapping Justin Verlander walking six batters was not a fun time.
Yeah. It was a similar genre
of bad. And, you know, just like outclassed by the Dodgers in every way. And like, yes, they won the Sunday game. They pulled it out in extra innings because Luis Guillorme hit a little like deke down the line game winning single. Like, that's just a BAPIP thing that they kind of lucked into. They didn't win because they like hit the cover off the ball or anything.
And it was again Buck's decisions that even made it get to that point.
Yes, we did Trevor Gott, eighth inning guy, and that went about as expected. David Robertson pitched two innings in that game, so he was clearly available for two innings, but he didn't pitch in the eighth when they had the lead.
And he hadn't pitched since before the All-Star break.
Well, I was wondering if he had been available for two innings yesterday, why was he not available for one any of the prior 2 days?
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. It's just
because he has to pitch the ninth with a lead.
But the thing is like, Buck has used Robertson in the eighth inning on many occasions this season. This is like regression managing. Like, this is like going backwards. Like, he's demonstrated that he's willing to do this with Robertson in the past. He did it with Edwin Diaz the season before. Too much success, might I add.
Like, there's just no sense of urgency. Has he just given up on the season?
Yeah, like, I don't know what it is. Like, I think I said this in the previous podcast, but Buck is, like, managing, like, a guy who, like, wants to, like, prove a point to the front office or something like that, almost, at times. Like, all right, you're giving me this Trevor Gott guy? All right, that's who I'm using, then. It's like, yeah. Oh, great.
And he uses TJ Stewart way too much, too.
Yes.
It also occurs to me that if there were alien body snatchers who had taken over Buck Showalter, and they got everything they needed to know about his personality from Twitter in 2016, then that's what they would come up with, is the Buck Showalter that we have now. Is like what everybody complained about him over the last 10 years and just turned that into actually a manager.
Yep. Yeah. It's kind of crazy. Like, I feel like he's like unrecognizable from even like Orioles version of Buck Showalter that I know. Like, it's, yeah, he's like regressing. Like, it's not just like no learning has occurred, like unlearning sometimes occurs, and it's, I don't get it. But I think it's just like, I think it's partially just because this is the same manager that managed the 2022 Mets, right? And not to say he didn't make mistakes last year, but I think part of it is just that, like, when the team's playing bad, you notice every single mistake that he makes. But part of it is, I think, that he's actually getting worse. I don't know.
Yeah.
But he's not doing himself any favors either with his post-game comments. Like, no, I don't think those were uncompetitive at-bats when they struck out on three pitches. Like, they're sticking up from your players, and then they're coming off as delusional. Like, there has to be a way you can, and I get they're losing a lot, so he's probably tired of being asked the same questions over and over again, but that's not what a fan base wants to hear when they only get one hit and it was the first hit of the game. Like, where's the responsibility here?
Yeah, and I mean, the only way for him to stop being asked those questions is for them to stop losing all the time.
Yeah.
I don't know what to tell him about that. But yeah, I mean, now we've reached the point where, because, you know, in order for the Mets to sort of salvage this season and avoid having to be sellers at the deadline, basically, they would have had to have kept that winning streak going. Not necessarily, like, have a 10 or 11 game winning streak, but they would have had to have, like, keep winning, like, you know, 3 out of every 4 games for a while. And they have not done that. So it's at the point now where they are so far out with so many teams ahead of them that it would kind of be silly not to sell at least the pieces that have any sort of value at all. I mean, people have talked about like Scherzer and Verlander, but I don't even know what you get for those guys at this point when they're being paid the money that they're being paid. So their best trade chips at this point are likely David Robertson and Tommy Pham.
I mean, they could probably eat a big chunk of that salary on
sure
Verlander and Scherzer. I mean, that's probably the best way ahead in terms of turning something into hay.
Yes. And that is the advantage of having Steve Cohen as the owner. In addition to the types of trades that they made, like the one for Trevor Gott, where they just like took all of Chris Flexen's money and then DFA'd him, basically ate that money in order to buy the pitcher that they wanted. Now they can do the trades that the Wilpons were never willing to do, which is get better prospects back for your trade chips by eating salary. And so they can do that. They can do that with Robertson and Pham on a smaller scale, and they could do it with Verlander and Scherzer if they wanted to.
The deal would still have to be there, though. It would have to be good enough.
Yes.
And I don't trust Eppler to make that deal.
No.
Yeah. There's also, yeah, exactly. Can Billy Eppler execute that? I don't think so.
No.
Billy Eppler has his strengths, maybe strength singular, which is that he brought Kodai Senga here. He is really good in the Asian market and has established relationships with these players, and could potentially be the reason that Shohei Ohtani becomes a Met if that does come to pass. It would probably be like largely Billy Epler's doing. That is basically his only value at this point.
Although also props to Kodai at the All-Star game being a sleeper agent.
Putting in the work. Yes. Oh my God.
I appreciate you, Kodai.
Oh, yes. For talking to Ohtani and palling around with him, and like Ohtani seems to legitimately like Kodai Senga, and they seem to be legitimately friends, and
he seems
really great
to be one of the most likable people.
Yes.
Yes, Senga. I mean, he's just, I'm not just saying that because he's my dude, although also because he's my dude, but he's just like so charming and funny, and he has been such a like bright spot.
Maggie, you are on year 3, I think, of your dudes being.
Yeah, well, and it's 3 for 3 because I don't think we did them in 2020, or I blacked out.
Possibly.
Either are possible. But yeah, no, I had Taiwan Walker during his best year, and then Mark Canha last year.
Didn't you have Amed Rosario 1 year?
Oh, yeah, I did. He was kind of okay.
Yeah, that might have been the closest to what we would call a flop, but I feel like you've had overwhelming success of dudes, like the most success of the three of us.
And to be fair, I had nothing to go on with Rosario. Yeah. I had no reason to think anything good was going to happen.
my biggest failure was this year, John Curtis. I thought he would be like a key part of that bullpen, alas.
I'm still holding out hope for Lucchese.
Yeah. Linda and I's dudes are struggling this year.
They're on the struggle bus.
Yeah.
And it's just on a shuttle route to and from
from Syracuse.
Yeah, seriously. And like, I mean, like, there aren't many dudes we could have picked that would have been much better.
Neil.
That's the thing, man.
Neil,
well, that's what's been tough about this year, is that like it feels like all of their potential dudes have flopped, whereas last year all of the potential dudes did not.
Yeah.
Like, and that's, you know, that's the difference.
Like, Pete's in one of his slumps again. Like, what is worth watching at this point? It's basically Kodai Senga and Francisco Alvarez right now. And, like, that's going to be the, like, after they trade all the guys with any value, that's, those are going to be the only guys to watch the games, the only reason. And I guess to see if, like, you know, I don't know, if you're a person who's particularly inspired by, like, Ronnie Mauricio and Mark Vientos, like, God bless, then there will be a reason to watch to see if they're anything. But I just, yeah, it's bleak, and it's only going to get bleaker once they sell off their pieces, if they do.
I feel like losing to the Padres and Dodgers kind of saved them from Epler doing something stupid.
Save them from themselves.
Yes.
That is also true.
So I feel like it might have been a blessing in disguise.
A little bit, yeah. Because, like, if they had won those two series, not even, like, swept them both or anything like that, if they won 2 out of 3 in each of those series or something like that, and on top of the, like, 6-game winning streak that they had right before that, I think that they could have, like, squinted their eyes and been like, oh, we're still in it. Which I wouldn't have even been, like, I wouldn't have even argued with them or been opposed to that, because, like, that's what you want, right? You want teams to try who are within striking distance. You want them to try. But it would have just sucked if they had kind of stood pat and, you know, nothing came
or
of it.
Or worse, like, traded off somebody for, I don't know, some Band-Aid. That, yeah. I mean, there's definitely worse things they could have done than stand pat.
And I think that, I mean, you know, Linda, you and I were talking about this in Slack a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's not very inspiring to think about the last time that they kind of sold off all these, like, veterans on expiring contracts, a la Tommy Pham and David Robertson. The last time they did that was 2017, when they sold off, like, Lucas Duda, Curtis Granderson. And all they got,
at the end of it all, we got Drew Smith.
Exactly. So that does not exactly inspire confidence, like, thinking to ourselves, oh boy, we get another Drew Smith at the end of all of this.
And all, yeah, all will cost us.
That's exciting.
Yeah, like, but on the other hand, I do think, I mean, I don't exactly pretend to remember what the market was like in 2017 at that time. The 2017 season is something I tried not to remember. But, like, there are so few teams actually selling this year that I think that they might get something of value for.
But the problem is, you're competing with Cardinals stars. Like, Pham's cheaper, but do you want Nolan Arenado as a bat, or do you want Tommy Pham?
Yeah, well, you know, Pham's cheaper.
It sure is. Yeah, but it's only for, I guess, I don't know how long.
Think Robertson is by far their most valuable trade.
Yeah, it's,
and I think
be
that
Robertson.
He will command. I mean, he was traded at the deadline last year, and the Phillies dealt a pretty good prospect for him last year, if I recall. And I'm not well versed in the Phillies system, but I remember people saying at the time that it was a hefty price that they paid.
I think if Scherzer rattles off a couple of really solid starts and they pay most of his salary, he will also garner something worthwhile, but he has to get off a couple more good starts.
Yeah,
which he has done lately. I mean, that's one thing. I mean, that's, it's like, oh great, they can trade him, as opposed to like, oh great, we get to have something worth watching.
Yeah, right.
In the month of September.
But they do have to have someone pitch those games, and at least Jose Quintana is set to make his season debut on Thursday. So. The rotation that the Mets thought that they were going to have at the start of the season will finally all be there.
Better late than never.
Better late than never, I suppose.
It's like when Harvey, Wheeler, DeGrom.
Yeah, they're going to get that one turn before Scherzer's traded.
Oh, who else? Yeah. They got in their one.
The five aces, you know, yeah. Injured. Harvey, DeGrom,
Wheeler,
Syndergaard, Wheeler, Nats.
Yes. They all got one turn of the rotation. Now we will get our super rotation one turn.
One time. Before Scherzer's traded. I don't actually think Scherzer's going to be traded. I don't know. Maybe he will be. We'll see.
I don't think so. Because then you're essentially paying for pitcher twice. You're paying to make Scherzer go away, and then you have to sign somebody in the offseason to replace him.
Yeah.
I guess that is the question.
Exactly. So we'll see.
I can think of somebody who could replace him.
We'll see. Hopefully Quintana does well. At this point, you just kind of got to hope for the little wins, like, you know, little reasons to find joy. It's at this point, despite the only difference being the super sky high expectations of this team, it's just another one of those Mets seasons where they're not going anywhere. We're used to these, just not ones where they have the highest payroll in baseball. So we will see. But in the meantime, we will still be here every week, sadly, talking about the Mets, regardless of what they do. And this week in the second half of the show, we have a really cool segment for you guys where we bring on some of our favorite White Sox ladies to preview the White Sox series and talk a little bit about the White Sox this year, another disappointing team that the Mets will surely lose to.
Congratulations in advance, White Sox fans.
Exactly. And sort of commiserate about both of our teams struggling and being unwatchable for most of the season. It should be a fun chat. So, yeah, we look forward to chatting with them, and you'll hear it in the second half of the show. So get excited, folks.
162 games of baseball a season can feel like a real grind to watch. Unless you're the Mets the last week, who have all of a sudden turned into the most exciting team in baseball, then baseball seems wonderful. But we all know that can't last. And so when it's not there, you can put the excitement back into each and every game with MyBookie. Run lines, money lines, and props galore. No one gives you more opportunities to win than MyBookie. Getting started is simple. Deposit $200 and play with $300 instantly. Just use promo code Applesauce or follow the link in the show notes to claim a MyBookie deposit bonus of 50% of your initial deposit. Whether you're a diehard fan, a newcomer to the sport, or you're just riding this great week of Mets baseball, there's never been a better time to join the MyBookie family. Go ahead and sign up today using the promo code Applesauce or follow the link in the show notes and secure your first deposit bonus of up to $1,000 with MyBookie. Whatever you put in, they'll meet halfway, all the way up to $1,000. Yes, $1,000. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie. Let's go Mets.
Hey, folks, welcome back. For the second half of the show this week, we have some of our favorite White Sox ladies on to preview the upcoming series and commiserate about our two disappointing baseball clubs. So welcome to Crystal. Hi, Crystal.
Hello.
And Keelan. What's up, Keelan?
Hello.
And say hello to Colleen.
Hello.
And Janice is here, too. What's up, Janice?
Hey, what is up, y'all?
So we're so happy you guys could all come on. So thank you so, so much. We'll just get things started by asking you all about, obviously, we can commiserate. We both know what it's like to root for a struggling ball club this season in the year of our Lord 2023. And, you know, from the White Sox perspective, like, what has been kind of the biggest driver behind the White Sox particular struggles this season, do you think?
I mean, yeah, I would start with go ahead, Janice.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. You could pretty much start everywhere. There has been so many huge, lofty expectations for at least the past 2-3 years. And I mean, the White Sox got a new manager, essentially handed out the biggest contract in team history to Andrew Benintendi. And the dude just hit his first home run just a few weeks ago, and we're already in the midpoint of the season. So, I mean, I know he's not known for his just massive power, but still, though, I mean, we've been expecting plenty of run production, at least from his lineup spot, but. Essentially, big TLDR is that they were supposed to be good on paper. On paper, this is a great organization, but the product on the field certainly does not reflect that.
Yeah, and like Gina said, you know, Andrew Benintendi is the biggest contract in the team history. Like, he's got a $75 million guarantee, and he's the team leader in batting average at 290 with a like 353 on base percentage. And I saw, like, I was looking at that today and I was like, that sucks. Like, just like objectively, that sucks. And like, that guy, really, that fucking guy? Well, I don't know if I can swear on this podcast.
Oh, you can. It's fine. We swear a lot.
Yay.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely. But like, you know, they're the, I guess for me, it all goes back to like, it's, you know, starting with Tony La Russa, the second time, not the first time. And, you know, bringing him in because Jerry felt bad that Hawk fired him in the 80s. And I was like, well, there's kind of a reason they fired him in the 80s because he sucked. You know, and like, you know, thanking God when he couldn't finish out last season. And they were just so bad. Yeah. And then Pedro Grifol, and everyone's like, well, okay, like, give this guy a chance. And, like, look how the season turned out. Like, they have Mike Clevenger. They basically gave the finger to the fans. They got a new manager and, like, essentially just kept things as business as usual. And, like, did y'all think something would change here? Like, I don't know. Like, does the org think that everyone's stupid? I mean, and they knew something was going on because they canceled Soxfest. Like, that should have been our clue that they just didn't give a shit.
Yeah, I saw someone on Twitter say that Tony La Russa was just a symptom of the larger problem. And I was like, that's a great way to put it, because I think that describes exactly. That was just like one symptom among many.
Yes. I'll also say, obviously, every single team deals with injury, but we have had so many players just playing with clear injuries. Like Tim Anderson right now has not been right since last season. I think he's still playing hurt. And then just kind of the carousel of Eloy Jimenez, Yoan Moncada, Luis Robert Jr., like all these players that are, they're playing injured clearly, but there is no one else to come in for them and be productive in this game. And the White Sox refuse to properly use the injured list.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah. I was going to say, we broke free from bad ownership finally, even though the team does not
brag.
So is the White Sox's issue stem from ownership? Is it just an organizational failure? Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. All the shit comes from the top.
Yep. It's a huge problem. And, like, for people who don't pay that close of attention to Chicago sports, you know, going back to, like, the 90s, so Jerry Reinsdorf, who owns the White Sox, also owns the Chicago Bulls.
Oh.
And he, you know what, the reason the Bulls were so good was because of Jordan for so long. And, I mean, and that's not a secret, right? But then, you know, after the, you know, the dynasty and all of that, the Bulls have haven't been good, and they've been garbage, and they were garbage for a really long time. And then, you know, Reinsdorf stepped away from like the day-to-day ownership business, and now his son Michael runs the team. I mean, and they're nowhere near what they used to be, but like, they're not as bad as they had been for so long. And I think the same is true with the White Sox right now, is that Jerry, you know, he's too much. He's not involved as poorly as the Wilpons were, which, like, oh. But he's not doing the team any favors. And there's not, like, unless he sells the team, which, you know, he's not going to do, or he dies, things aren't changing.
I also wonder how much he even, back in, like, January or February, I don't actually remember. He spoke at some kind of conference. And his response to some of the questions about, like, I should be able to, like, talk to fans and understand what they want. They were just so – they did not match the actions. So that made me wonder how much he's even there, if he's just, like, woo, like, gone somewhere else. I don't know. Yeah. That was very weird.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, and, you know, and Jerry, like, familiar to everybody in the city, Jerry's a big loyalty guy. Like, he's not gonna fire anybody. He, you know, he brought back Tony La Russa because he was sad his buddy got fired in the 80s. So
nepotism.
Nepotism
flies around here though.
Yeah.
Oh, big time. It's Chicago. Come on. that's just how we do.
Yeah, if you're gonna have an owner meddling, you kind of want the Hal Steinbrenner version of meddling. Then yes. You know, like that version.
Get one of your kids banned from working at baseball operations.
Or like, you know, or Steve Cohen's version of meddling. Like, I know that the Mets have not worked out this year, but you know, you want an owner who's going to step in and say, listen, pay this guy whatever it takes to get him to come here, sort of thing.
Yeah. And that's hilarious to me because, like, Jerry didn't want to approve the sale of the Mets specifically because Cohen was going to spend money. He was like, he's going to spend too much money. It's like, it's not your money. What the fuck do you care?
Well, he's worried about him setting the bar for everybody else and exposing, like, what. Like, you know, which he, it turns out that he didn't really have much to worry about because now guys like Jerry can point to the 2023 Mets and be like, look at the poster child of spending and failing. And I'm like, great. Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The one time Jerry's we spend.
Well, I think just like that's the
one example, like probably like the one example through history of maybe spending. Both in winning, but like there's a large goal in
winning. Yep. Well, just my favorite part about like Steve came in and he's like, I'm gonna be Uncle Steve and I'm gonna spend money and it's gonna be a new organization and a new culture. And like, I mean, yeah, bringing in Buck Showalter, like. I will stand Buck Showalter. Like, I will die on that hill. I don't think he's the problem. I think the fact that they didn't fully clean house in terms of coaching staff has been a big part of the problem. And like, you know, it's same thing with the White Sox. Like, they go in slumps, people get hurt, all of those things. But I think one of the big problems the Mets have had is overall coaching staff. Like, it's not just Buck, right? It's other people too.
I mean, at a certain point, like when the, I mean, we can say that the players aren't performing to their standard and that's true. But yep. At a certain point, it becomes like something about their coaching philosophy that is failing. Whether it be the pitching staff and Jeremy Hefner, who it seems to be well respected around baseball, but like there is no actual evidence that he's good at this, like in terms of results. Yep.
Cooper.
who has Jeremy Hefner fixed? Certainly not David Peterson. Certainly not like Verlander and Scherzer's struggles are a different thing. Like they're veterans, they've been doing this a long time. But like I look at guys like David Peterson and Tyler McGill, and I think to myself, like, what evidence is there that this coaching staff is helping them? None, really.
And the White Sox saw that too with their pitching coaches, for example. Like Cooper got like I have no idea how he was able to ride out on that team so long. Like even Ozzy, you know, got let go a few years after the World Series, and you know they brought in Ethan Katz because oh my god, Ethan Katz is so great. You know, he was doing such great work at, you know, as the assistant coach on the, you know, and the Giants and at the high school everybody comes from in California that I can't think of the name of right now. Harvard Westlake, thank you. Words are hard, but like the last couple seasons, I mean, there's been some struggles, and at some point it's like, okay, you gotta look at, like you guys said, the coaching philosophy, like what is going on.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, you know, with the White Sox, it's like it's one thing when like Lance Lynn is doing what Lance Lynn is doing. But it's another thing when you're not like maximizing what you can get out of like younger guys. That starts to be an issue of like coaching and player development, which the Mets also suck at.
Dylan Cease just got his first win in 2 months. Like,
oh my God.
And
didn't Giolito take a step back this year too, or am I making that up?
Last season he did. This season he's been better-ish.
Yeah, I mean, if you're good at a But yeah, he's definitely not posting the same numbers that he did in 2020.
So we will, next thing I want to ask y'all about is, similarly, like bonding over, like finding reasons to be positive or finding reasons to tune in when the team is not living up to expectations, which is something that, you know, the Mets and White Sox have in common this season for like different reasons, but you know, ultimately it's the same sort of feeling. And so I think on the Mets side of things, it's been the performance of Kodai Senga and the emergence of Francisco Alvarez for the most part. Those have been the two like biggest bright spots this season, like kind of by far. And so I'm wondering for each of you, like, what is your like reason to watch White Sox games these days? Like, what is your reason to tune in?
Aside is from this getting paid to write about this
team. I was going to say.
Aside that doesn't count, Crystal. That's cheating.
No, that's fair. I appreciate that.
I'll say mine has been Jake Berger. He just hit, I think it was either 21 or 22 the other night for home runs, and this guy didn't make the opening day roster, but he has been so much fun to watch, and he is just probably one of the best guys in baseball, just in like pure kindness and advocacy for mental health. That's a big part of who he is. You know, he tore his ACL twice and almost never played baseball again, and then is back and is one of the hottest hitters on our team, you know, where you
Didn't
can be
he
watching
also have an Achilles thing too. He had all kinds of crazy.
Yeah, he's been through the ringer, and then he comes back, doesn't make opening day roster, gets called up because, you know, obviously injuries keep happening. And then he's, you know, one of, again, the hottest home run hitters. You can scroll Twitter while you're watching a game, and if he does anything, you suddenly see like 12 people tweet out Burger Bomb at the same time. He's fun. He's really nice. And he's like the one person right now that I just can honestly say I enjoy watching him. Even if he's kind of slumping, he's still been a lot of fun this season.
Is this where I admit that I don't watch the team?
Oh, yeah, sure. Obviously.
I haven't been watching. It's just so painful to watch. And like, God bless Crystal and Janice and Keelan for being able to do it while not, and you know.
I don't, actually, not often. Like you, Pauline, I'm like, ugh. But yeah.
I just can't. Like, I went through it, the quote-unquote rebuild seasons. I can't fucking do it. I'm tired, y'all.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you're not enjoying it, then it's not worth it.
I think
baseball's supposed to be fun.
Yeah,
it is.
With Mike,
that's
Clevenger,
why we're watching other teams.
Yeah, even before the season even started, I think with Mike Clevenger, it was going to make it very difficult to watch and enjoy, because how can you support a team that is throwing it in our faces, basically, that they have somebody like him on it? And he himself has been terrible about it, and some of the way he's reacted to things, like when he interviews. But I will say I've been kind of surprised by Gregory Santos, who I don't think any of us were really paying that much attention to before this season started, and now in terms of like FOR, he's like fourth on the team, which is insane to me because I had no idea really who he was that well before this season.
I will always have a soft spot for Elvis Andrus. Just, I love him so much.
He's a fun player.
He is great.
He's so fun.
He has some great stories too about his anxiety and stuff as well. So I agree, Colin. Yeah. He's awesome.
He's a wonderful human, and like, I loved him and Adrian, or his and Adrian's friendship. Like, I was very lucky to be able to see them live in Texas together, and just, I love them so much. Because my husband and I were there the weekend that Adrian hit his like 2000th hit. We were actually at the game the day before. And we saw him get up to like 1, or maybe it was 3,000th. I don't remember. But we saw him get like 1 or 2 away. But him and Elvis just on the field together were always such a delight. But yeah, I just, like Keelan said, like with all the Mike Clevenger stuff, it basically was a finger to the fans. And after that, I was like, you know, I know that the team doesn't care about me, like as a person. Like, I'm not an idiot, right? Like, I know baseball teams don't fucking care about you. But just that kind of did it for me. I'm like, you really just don't give a shit. And to come out and say, like, oh, well, we didn't know. My ass. All right. My fat Irish butt, you didn't know. Because, like, it's yeah. it's been out there since he was on Cleveland.
Right.
That he did some shit.
Yeah.
To, like, his yeah. kids' moms.
And he was like, best friends with Trevor Bauer, like the company.
Yeah.
And Trevor Bauer has also been talking about how Clevenger has been a bad person. Like,
yeah,
when pot meets kettle, it's pretty sad that you still pick that.
Right. Right. Yeah, and it's just
when like, Trevor Bauer says that you're a bad person, that's something else.
Oh, yeah. I was like, really? Really? That guy thinks that you're a bad person. You need to reevaluate your life.
Yeah.
Do you guys remember when Clevenger actually had a Gold Digger by Kanye West as his walkout music?
And doubled down on
yes.
like, we covered like, how, that on this very show. We covered that on this very
right. And I'm just thinking, think, like, how fucking disrespectful. It's just like not only am I going to like double down, but essentially he's just telling all of us to go fuck ourselves, which I'm just like, what the hell, man? Like, this team fucking hates us.
Yep.
Yeah. It's this is like, we can commiserate about this too, because this is something that Mets fans all dealt with when the Mets re-signed Jose Reyes after Jose Reyes was a domestic abuser. Obviously, his first run around with the Mets, that incident had yet to occur. And he became a beloved icon for the Mets during that time when he came up at the same time as David Wright. They were the shortstop, their base tandem of that era of Mets baseball. Everyone loved Jose Reyes. Then he shoved his wife through a sliding glass door and the Mets brought him back anyway afterwards.
Fucking love those Wilpons, man. Woo!
Yeah.
Woo, everything that came out after that, too, with the toxic workplace and Mickey Callaway, it just seemed like a culture they were fostering.
Yep.
Yep.
And I remember we talked about this at the time with some of our favorite Cubs folks on, and they talked about Addison Russell at that time.
Yep.
Talked about commiserating about what it's like to be a woman rooting for a team that clearly doesn't care about you. And the Mets demonstrated that yet again, and that they have not really changed the culture when it is just a stroke of luck that the Mets did not end up with Trevor Bauer instead of the Dodgers.
Oh, thank fucking God.
And like, I don't I forget that. I remember it every day.
Okay, yeah.
To be fair, the Cubs also had Aroldis Chapman.
Yes, that's right.
And
so I had to constantly donate money during that World Series run because I hate him so much.
Yep.
Well, and here's like kind of the best part about the Aroldis Chapman thing. They still talk about, oh, he did. He was a hero in the World Series. I'm like, he's not a hero
that game.
At what cost?
He's not a hero to the girlfriend he pointed a fucking gun at. But
well, sure. That's the thing too. You know, there was an uproar about that. There was an uproar about the Astros acquiring Ozuna. Like these teams directly benefited from domestic violence, clearly. Yep. And so Manfred was like, we'll change that. We'll make sure if you're suspended, you won't be able to be, you know, acquired by another team. Has that happened? No.
Nope.
So clearly we also know where Manfred's priorities are.
They've only had a domestic violence policy since what, like 2015?
Yeah, it was recent.
Like, do we need to really go back in the archives and see like what shitty men were doing before we fucking looked at them?
I mean, I've got an entire article about all of the things since 15, just 15 alone. This is I mean, I have some before too, but like just 15 alone, there have been probably 15, 20 incidents where something has happened and nothing was done about it.
Oh, I mean, like Mets fans idolize the 1986 Mets. I have news for them about
that's a rough time. Yep.
The character of those players that you love so much who were on that team. And the things that they have done to women. We've got Darryl
Boston as a base coach.
And and Darryl Boston, so cute. He had the little whistle that he blew when they made a good play. And it made the Royals so mad. Hey, Darryl Boston also raped a girl, but you know, whatever.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, but it's cute because he has a whistle and it makes Royals fans so mad.
It's just relentlessly depressing. You know, like you guys were saying, like people knew about Clevinger. The way if people like us here on the internet, if we knew about Clevinger, you bet your ass the White Sox knew about Clevinger.
And we were warning people about Bauer. Before that
broke.
We've been warning people about these scumbag players this entire time, but no one thought, hey, let's listen to the women.
Nope. Well, and I like some national reporters sometimes. What pisses me off and pissed me off when it happened, like ESPN. Oh, Trevor Bauer. What a quirky guy. He's so cool. He's so smart. He's so quirky. And that makes people
innovative.
Mad. Yeah. Oh, that's what makes people mad. No. And then our very own Jason Benetti, who is also part of ESPN. We would watch the games like locally. They would be playing Cleveland. Oh, Trevor Bauer. You know, he's just such a smart guy and he's so innovative and he's so interesting. And have to listen to Jason Benetti blow smoke up this guy's ass when I know, when I've complained about him on Twitter, like, hey, Trevor Bauer is kind of a shitty human. You know, I'm getting screamed at by his fan base.
He's or also like, not that smart.
He's not.
Clearly.
No. If you're dicking around with a fucking drone during the playoffs and you cut your finger, you deserve.
He's like baseball.
The day you have
Musk.
Yes. Yes. Oh my god, that is such a good comparison.
He is baseball.
Basically, a complete idiot's like ideal of a smart person.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, that's so such a good call.
He's so fucking smug about it too. Like, oh, I'm so smart. Look at me. No, no, you're not. Shut
like,
the fuck
no,
up.
No, I want to pitch in Japan. Really.
No, you didn't.
Oh, yeah. It's why it's always been my dream to pitch in Japan, my column.
And then get demoted.
And then get demoted. Why it's always been my dream to pitch in Japan's minor leagues, my column. Why it's always been my dream to be out of baseball forever, my column.
It's like, wow, Japan has a triple A. Didn't know that.
Yeah, it's like, ugh.
With Clevinger, too. It wasn't just with women. I remember Francisco Lindor having to call him out because he went out breaking protocol during the pandemic. And Lindor was pissed because Carrasco was fighting cancer at the time or just coming back from fighting cancer. And he totally just blew COVID protocols. Like, he's irresponsible. He's a bad teammate.
Yeah, they went to Indiana. It was him and, the kid who's
uncle. Plesak.
Yeah, yeah, please. You know where they went? They went over the fucking border to Indiana. I'm like, listen, if you're gonna get busted partying during COVID, don't fucking do it in Indiana. Like, are you guys fucking kidding? Where'd you go? Fucking Hobart?
That's where I like to get lit, is Indiana.
Yes. Yeah. Woohoo! And Maryville.
Yippee.
Go get those gummies, soak them in vodka. That's what they're doing.
Yeah, give me those Jello shots and Jello shots in a Jewel parking lot.
What absolutely just like chaps my ass about this entire thing is like, all right, so Clevinger broke protocol with Plesak while he was in Chicago, and the White Sox front office was like, we want that.
Yeah, that's the guy we want. That's our guy.
We absolutely want this like over 4 ERA type guy who has not had great stuff like for a very, very long time. And so there were just a lot of troglodytes online defending this guy, and I'm like, all right, so he had an okay spring training, but I essentially predicted that he would Matt Latos out, where, yeah, he'll yep. have like maybe three or four really strong starts at the beginning of the year, but XERA doesn't lie. XFIP doesn't lie either. Like,
nope.
Both of those stats were sky high. And I'm like, all right, so he's going to come crashing down to earth really quickly and really soon. And lo and behold, look what happened. He essentially like shat himself on the mound before he went on the IL with a phantom shoulder injury or something. And it's like, no, it's like, this guy oh, sucks my arm ass. Hurts. You can't, exactly.
Like, no, he just sucks.
Like, Matt Latos was like a little bit likable. He had like a cat.
He had cat, like, Latos.
He has cat Latos.
You know, yeah. Like,
he did have cat little, Latos. Like,
he was kind of likable, and Clevenger is nothing about likeable. As entertaining as, no. He's a garbage. But, although, yeah.
Yeah. I do want to 180 this and talk about the best, one of the best humans on the White Sox, which is Liam Hendricks, to sort of cleanse the timeline, as they say, because we talked about reasons to tune in, and obviously, like, watching Liam Hendricks come back, you know, the second Clevenger's second go round with a cancer survivor on his team, notwithstanding, and probably not being, you know, conscious of that or caring. But the rest of us care and are very excited about it. And that was just like one of my favorite moments this entire season, like in all of baseball.
Liam Hendricks is a goat. Also, yeah, him. Really. Going back to him calling out Josh Donaldson, like when Josh Donaldson was like, oh yeah, you know, I tried to fight Giolito and he ran away from me. And Liam Hendricks was like, that parking lot is like, you know, 5 inches big. You didn't try and fight anybody. We would have all seen it.
he nobody likes Donaldson, like any of his clubhouses.
Yeah. He's like, there's a reason nobody likes him.
Yeah. It's amazing.
I'm like, peak shit talking, you're a king forever. I love you. Like, that immediately endeared himself to me.
Yeah. I was charmed by him, you know, prior to even being in the White Sox. Obviously, I knew who he was, but I remember going to a game while he was still on the A's, and they were in town. And I got seats right by the visitors, you know, bullpen. And I'm sitting there watching him just kind of like, be really funny and goofy in there. He was chirping back at White Sox fans, but like not in a mean way, just kind of like a chirping along with them kind of way. And he was just a blast to watch. And all I could think about was, man, this guy is so fun. Like, I wish we had someone like this, someone this fun. And then, you know, before you know it, he's on our team. So then him, you know, coming back from this cancer, and it's a cancer that I'm incredibly familiar with, unfortunately, was just so emotional, I think, for everyone. And his homecoming, I think, was just absolutely beautiful. Like, that, I don't cry very often. Like, my antidepressants make it super hard for me to show emotion. But Liam Hendricks just got me to completely break down, because I was just so happy for him, because he is. You really can't find someone that's going to shit on Liam Hendricks at all. He's just that lovable.
Yeah. And he's kind of also like single-handedly and proudly been our like the only player on the team that's really out there like as an ally, especially for Pride. He was like the face last year. You know, obviously this year he's probably dealing with stuff. But he has been like the one who, you know, there are some guys on the team who are good, and I think generally we get a good feeling about them, but he's the one who's like the most outspoken. So it's really wonderful.
He wouldn't come to a team that was not hosting a Pride night. That was his like top priority when he was incredible, you know, trying to figure out where he was going next.
Which is really just the Rangers now, I think.
Yeah.
The only team just out and out not hosting a Pride night. I mean, teams do it to varying degrees of success / clearly there are teams that are more invested in it than other teams. So I'll just put it that way. But yeah, I think it's just the Rangers that don't Pride night. So yeah.
I mean, that's
Liam Hendricks never going to be a Ranger.
Oh, how terrible. for them.
And I also appreciate that Hendricks is a big wife guy too.
Yeah.
And his wife is so pretty.
Yeah. They just seem like a nice couple. Like, can I go hang out with them?
Right? Yes. They really do.
Yeah, they do. Like, I feel like the Lindors are like the Mets royal family. And I feel like it's kind of like the Hendrixes are are the White Sox royal family in a way. Just so wholesome. Yeah.
Oh, I love. So I was when my grandmother died, I was sharing a room with my sister and my baby niece. And we were trying, like, my niece was, you know, she's somewhere new and a lot of new people. And so she was kind of stressed out. And I was showing her picture, I was showing her video of Francisco Lindor's daughter during the play, after the playoff press conference, when she was like looking for Buck. And I found like different videos on Instagram of her like just dancing. And oh my God, my niece loved it. I'm like, she's a Lindor fan.
Oh, Lindor's daughter is so cute.
She's and now so he has two of them. Oh my gosh, they're so cute. Like, ugh.
Adorable. Lindor going full girl dad mode is like one of the, well, we're talking about bright spots of the Mets season, like just Lindor's general girl dadness.
Yes.
Is a bright spot for the Mets. For sure. Oh, so wholesome. We love it. So the last topic I kind of wanted to ask y'all about was about All-Star Game and Home Run Derby thoughts, because we haven't recorded since the All-Star Game and since the Home Run Derby. And we both had players represented in each of these events. And so I just wanted to get your general just like vibes on the whole thing. Obviously, like for us, it was kind of like, you set Pete Alonso up for failure.
Yeah. That was unfair.
By matching him up against the hometown boy. And like, again,
a terrible pitcher.
I'm not upset. Yeah. I'm not upset. Like it was a fun moment to watch Julio do his thing in front of the home crowd. Like, it's fine.
Yeah.
Totally fine. But I was kind of like, well, hey, we don't have anything. Mets fans don't have anything. This was our one thing.
I want Pete to pick better pitchers for the Home Run Derby.
I heard like the person he picked was not available, and then he tried to go to someone else and they couldn't do it last minute. So like they had never worked together before. So that wasn't really all on Pete. Terrible pitcher that he'd never worked with before.
It was gonna be like his college pitching coach. Was that what it was, Linda?
I thought it was supposed to be his college pitching coach.
And he had like a high school pitching coach, and he had a forearm strain. I was like, what are you, like a freaking MLB player here? A forearm strain throwing batting practice? Excuse me.
Yeah. Does it count if the White Sox having a player, if it was somebody who it had to be, because you have to have a player on the all, like everybody has to have at least one player,
but not everybody has to have a player in the Home Run Derby, and he was in the Home Run Derby and did great and looked awesome,
and then he wasn't in the All-Star game. Sorry, I really shouldn't laugh about that, but I was like, when I saw that alert, I'm like, of course he's not in the All-Star game because he might be hurt. Like, why the fuck not? Of course.
Similarly, anticlimactic was Kodai Senga getting named as a replacement in the All-Star game and then not appearing.
Yeah.
That was also last minute for him.
It was last minute. I understand that there were guys who were like, you know, not replacements who needed to pitch. I get it. Yeah. But I was kind of just like,
they should have let him pitch to Pete.
Yeah, that would have been funny.
He said he didn't want to face Ohtani.
Yeah, I wouldn't either.
No, I can't blame him.
Yeah. But yeah, it was a fun All-Star game. I mean, I know you guys are American League fans, but I was happy to see the National League pull it out for once.
I know. That was so nice. Oh, you
can have one every decade or so.
Precious.
Yeah,
a little All-Star game dub as a treat. National League.
I'm looking for any reason for the AL Central to be like disbanded or like absorbed in pieces to other divisions. So at this point, I'm like, cool.
I have
a bag.
here's the one good thing that White Sox fans can hold on to. And, you know, Keelan, Crystal, and Janice all know how much I hate the Royals. White Sox fans in the AL Central can always be so happy that they will never be the worst team in the AL Central because the Kansas City Royals exist.
True. And although the Kansas City Royals beat the New York Mets in the 2015.
Yeah, they still won recently.
And I will never be okay.
I won't be over
it. That one. So by the way, the one time they actually fucking win something, any Royals fan, and you guys have been lucky because you don't have to deal with Royals fans on a regular basis like White Sox fans have, you would have thought that they were the fucking Yankees the way these Royals fans act now. I'm like, guys, you won one World Series, like, ever, and Ned Yost rode that thing for like 5 years. All right, like, let's calm the fuck down. You're 21 games out of first. Yeah. Again.
Yeah, they can't suck enough for me. I'm still bitter about that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I hated them pretty hardcore before then, and that really didn't help.
I mean, these are guys that are long gone from the Royals, but I still can't look at either Eric Hosmer's face or Mike Moustakas's face without feeling like visceral
rage,
like, visceral rage and just like nausea, like literal nausea.
Ugh.
Yeah. Moose is also a Sox killer, too. So we definitely feel you there. That and Lorenzo Cain.
Yeah.
I would argue that, like, Moustakas has one of the most punchable faces in baseball.
Yes.
I argue.
False. Salvador Perez would punch in the face immediately.
I'm still bitter.
Immediately would punch in the face.
I do have a quick question. Are the White Sox the Mets of Chicago, and are the Cubs the Yankees of Chicago?
I hate that comparison.
I just had this conversation actually with Tim Ryder. He was on Visiting Dugout. That'll come out, you know, tomorrow, whenever this comes out. And he asked that exact same question.
Because that's what we hear.
Yeah, they are.
I feel like I talked to him about this.
Yes, we are kind of treated that way, though, because Chicago, the Cubs are so popular and their ballpark is so historic and blah, blah, blah. And like ESPN forgets that the White Sox exist. So I said, it does kind of feel like that sometimes.
But where are the Cubs' 27 rings? Excuse me. They
I was gonna say, at least the Yankees fans have a reason to be assholes. Like, I hate the Yankees as much as the next person, but like, Yankees fans do have a reason to be assholes. Like, they won a bazillion World Series and they bought them, blah, blah, blah. Wrigley Field is held together with duct tape and a fucking prayer. And I'm not even kidding. Because we got my mom a tour of Wrigley. My mom is a Cubs fan. God bless her. My sister and I gave her a tour of Wrigley. And it's free. Like, you just, you know, you schedule it for them. And she's got pictures of the press box being held together with duct tape. And I'm like, all that needs is a possum. I need the Oakland A's possum in there. But yeah, like, the Yankees Mets thing is hilarious to me, because last year I always take my mom to Cubs games when the Mets are in town, because I'm like, I get to see the Mets live, and my dad will not set foot in Wrigley even if you pay him. And last year, you know, it was the doubleheader, and we're at the second game, and there's this fucking Cubs fan sitting by us in the rows behind the Mets dugout, and he's like trying to talk shit to Mets fans, which I was like, bless your heart, kid. You're going to get destroyed by some guy from Brooklyn. But this kid fucking says to me, because, well, the Mets aren't even the best team in New York. And I looked at him and I'm like, where the fuck do you think you are right now? Because like, at that point, like, the Sox were actually doing well. And I was like, the Cubs aren't even the best team in their division, let alone their city. Like, you need to shush. He's like, well, I've been a Cubs fan all my life. I said, oh, since 2016. He's like, well, yeah, that's when I was 13. I was like, oh my God, you need to go somewhere else.
Although, do you know the legend of Cub Snake Jake? That happened during the Cubs Mets game last year.
Yep.
Cub Snake Jake is an icon. It's true.
He is an icon.
I was so mad that I was at the game and I missed it.
Were you at the game too, Allison?
I was at that game as well.
I was so mad about it. because I kept seeing it on Twitter and I was like, I can't believe I missed this. This would have been hilarious to see on TV.
Yeah, I watched the video like a million times after because I was like, oh my God, this is hilarious.
That's the only one Cubs fan we like.
Yeah.
Well, and we like our friends with
people. Oh, yes, Sarah. Yeah.
They're allowed.
Sarah's wonderful.
They're allowed.
Sarah's wonderful. Fun fact, Steve Gelbs at that sausage bar in Milwaukee this year, he went there the day after Crystal and I did. And I'd like to think that he went there because he knew Crystal and I were there.
Also, but no, don't even forget the Pete Alonso going to the same breakfast spot the day after we
did. Yes! He went the day after we did. Yeah.
I'm still
you missed Pete Alonso!
Wow.
So mad.
They just know that
breakfast place was dope.
Oh, it was so good. Even though I burnt my tongue on oatmeal, it was so good.
Wow. That oatmeal was hot like an hour later, too.
I think my entire esophagus was burnt, but it was still really delicious.
That oatmeal defied the laws of physics.
Yeah, I just think, I don't know. I think the Cubs White Sox like dynamic is completely different than the Mets Yankees dynamic in both like better and worse ways, I guess. I don't know. Like, I just think it's very, very different. Like, I don't know. I have a lot of little brother syndrome and always will, but like it's a different thing.
Well, and I would like to go to a Subway Series, and I feel like it will actually be less of a garbage fire than the Crosstown Classic.
No, because, I've been to a Subway Series game. It's miserable. Don't do that to yourself.
We stopped going. So, like, we used to, when I was
I stopped going. Like, I would take, my mom, like, we always had season tickets, my husband and I, for 100 years. Him and I always had season tickets. And I would sell the Cubs sock because I'm like, I don't want to go. I hate it. I hate going. It's so stupid. I took my mom for a couple years. And then actually the series before my husband and I went to Dallas where we saw the Elvis and Beltre, I got shit-faced the day before we left and made friends with a British guy who was sitting next to me for that game. And he said he was very impressed that Americans intermingled their fans because in the UK, in England, they have to sit on different sides of the stadium to prevent fights. And I was like, you know what, buddy? We could probably do with a lesson in that.
Yeah, no, they literally, in the Premier League, they literally will not let away fans sit in parts of the stadium because for safety. Yes.
That's amazing. I'm like, I feel like we need that because I've definitely seen Cubs fans and Sox fans peeing on each other at a Crosstown Cup. Yeah.
Ew.
All out the open too. I was like, ugh.
Similarly, we had partial like a 10 pack game plan or whatever growing up for Mets games. And those packs always included a Subway Series game because they thought that would be like a drawing thing for people to buy the packs. And after a while, my dad was like, we're not going to those anymore. I'm done.
Yeah. It's gross.
There wasn't even like a lot of out and out fighting. I just like hate being at those games because a lot of times, like in our own ballpark, the Yankees fans outnumber the Mets fans. And I just am.
That's why that's a whole Brewers Cubs. The Cubs fans call it Wrigley Field North or Wrigleyville North because they think it's cute. Yeah. And I'm like, no, it's that you rich assholes just go and buy out the stadium because you think that you're fun.
Yeah.
During the playoffs, weren't they banning like out of area code like ticket sales or out of zip code ticket sales?
The Nationals.
Yeah, I was gonna say in Milwaukee, maybe, but that's really something more like Nashville. Like the Nashville Predators do that, and I think somebody else did it this season too. Maybe Florida.
That's something they tried.
Yeah.
Yeah. They tried to restrict ticket sales to just Wisconsin addresses. But the thing is, though, Wisconsin has a lot of Cubs fans. Mm-hmm. So essentially you're essentially selling Brewers tickets to people, Cubs fans who just happen to live in Wisconsin. So no, that's not going to work.
Yeah. And also like StubHub exists, you know, that was like when my husband and I visited Nashville, we couldn't get tickets. because obviously we had a Chicago address and zip code. I just bought tickets on StubHub when we got there, and I was like, ta-da! I circumvented
ironclad system.
Yeah, I was like, ha-ha! Suck it, Predators. Also, worst team in all of sports.
Yeah,
the Nashville Predators. Those fans were awful to us. I actually, I was a Blackhawks fan my entire life up until all of the other stuff came out about them with the sexual abuse. And my husband and I are there. And, you know, my husband didn't grow up with hockey, but like he watched it when we started dating and got married. And we're at the Nashville Predators game. And, you know, we have Blackhawks stuff on, you know, no big deal. We're not like we've traveled to other arenas to see other teams before. We're not obnoxious about it. And this drunk Predators fan looks at me and goes, oh, does your neck hurt from looking at us in the standings?
No.
Like, and I turn and I'm like, first of all, Irish kid from the south side of Chicago. Like, I am mean as fuck. All right. And I just turned and looked at this guy. I said, no, it hurts from looking at all our fucking banners in the rafters. And his buddies were like, ooh, she got you. I'm like, get the fuck away from me. All right.
I got spit on at Citizens Bank Park once, so that's probably my worst fan.
Ew! No! I would
unprompted, too. Just, like, I was wearing a David Wright jersey, and a drunk Phillies fan did not like that, so that was...
My personality could never.
Mm-mm. I think I'm mean, too, and, like, if I'm prepared, I can be very, very rude, but I was so stunned by it that I just think I just stared at him. And like I think all I said was what the fuck.
Oh yeah, I see, that's the problem. If I'm unprepared, I will full on go apeshit. Like I will lose it. Like if somebody spit on me, zero thought process. Like I would be a TikTok video.
I'm easily just like stunned into submission because I'm constantly just like appalled by the levels of that humanity will sink to. I guess I'm just like not every time I'm surprised by it somehow when I shouldn't be. But
oh yeah, it would be like open mic night at the trap house. Like forget it. I have zero chill all the time.
We have that in
common. It is a problem. I am not a mellow person. Yeah, anyone spits on me, it's gonna be open mic night at the fucking trap house. Like forget
that's why
it.
You're fun. That's why we love you.
Yes.
Yay.
But so we are going to as we always do, we will end the show with walk-off wins, where each of us talks about something that is making us happy this week, baseball related or otherwise. So I'm just going to go around like kind of in clockwise order that you all are on my screen. So that's Crystal, you go first.
Okay, I will say my walk-off win is that I get to be in New York for this terrible, boring, someone has to win series.
But the team's about to have a mid-off and you will be right there.
Woo-hoo! I get to watch this mid-off in person, but at the same time, I get to see Jose Quintana come back, and I think Lucas is pitching the first game, so I'm excited about that. But I also...
Good news for you, you've got nothing to lose.
Yeah, exactly.
Someone's going to win.
But also, before I stop, I wanted to say, like, props to, you know, all of you Mets girlies over there, because Colleen and I have both been donating money all season to domestic violence organizations when Clevenger pitches. So again, like, props to you guys for also doing that throughout October. So we're excited to
do
that again.
That's awesome. And I've been seeing it on Twitter, and you guys are awesome for doing that. That's like, that's really great.
It has started kind of a fire under White Sox fans. I've seen a lot of people say like, oh, I've seen you do it. I've seen
Paul
do it. And like, now we're doing it every time. And I'm like, that's really cool. So that's why I always like post like accountability track. Are you doing this today? So again, like props to you guys for also doing that Dollars for Dingers. That's amazing.
Yep.
That warms our heart, and we will be doing it again in September this year, so stay tuned. We will be providing information as it becomes available, but of course we will be doing it again. So keep
good, because I got to get rid of the rest of my season ticket money, man. Clevenger keeps getting hurt, the weenie.
Yes, reserve that money for Dollars for Dingers. Just like
it is earmarked.
Okay, good.
Excellent.
Hopefully the Mets will actually hit dingers this year.
Christ.
Yeah.
Please, Pete, get out of your slump. Please. It's basically Pete Alonso that we're relying on for this, and Francisco Lindor to a little bit of an extent.
And Alvarez.
And Alvarez.
Yeah, Alvarez.
True. Janice, what is your walk-off win?
So my walk-off win, it's actually happening next week. Next week is my anniversary. And so what we are doing is we are actually going to Minneapolis to lo and behold, see the White Sox. And so a lot of I had to like really kind of just like justify this in my head where it's just like my boyfriend is also a White Sox fan for some background. And that's kind of how we met. So we essentially we both just complain and bitch and moan about the Sox and everything that like we feel that they could do better, essentially everything that we've said on the show. And to myself, I'm like, all right, so why are we spending our anniversary, our first anniversary, like supposedly this hallowed occasion? Why are we going out of state to watch a team that we both despise? And so I was thinking to myself, it was like, it's just something we like to do together. And even though, I mean, like the White Sox could, you know, just shit their pants on the field for all we care, we just enjoy each other's company so much that it honestly doesn't matter like how terrible the White Sox are. It's just something that we share together. And it's like this communal misery that we have essentially bonded over for this past year. So I mean, yeah, the White Sox could like shit themselves on the field for all we care, but like we're essentially there for each other, and that's what matters. But yeah, that is my walk-off win.
Yay. That's go to that delicious food hall again.
Yes, I will go to that delicious food hall, and I actually did get us tickets in club level. A Target Field club level has some really fantastic food. And he's never been too, so it's definitely going to be
Target
a great experience.
Target Field is nice.
Yeah, it really is.
It's a nice field.
You can bring a bag in, like a normal size bag.
Yes, you can bring a normal bag in.
Oh, that immediately has my support then.
Yes.
Right. There is no Target attached to Target Field, which is disappointing.
That's a little false advertising there.
Yeah, seriously.
I'm still mad about that, by the way. I'm like, that could be that team store. You can get all kinds of stuff there.
As someone whose partner is also a Mets fan, and we bond over the misery, and that's like that's how we met also, you know, I feel that, Janice, definitely, like we may be miserable, but we're miserable together, and that's all that matters.
I spent my wedding night at a Crosstown Cup game, like in my wedding dress still.
Amazing.
That's awesome. So,
that
like, why did I do that to myself? But yeah, I love the whole partner bonding over bad teams thing.
Yes. Colleen, what is your walk-off win?
I'm gonna. Oh, did you say Colleen or Keelan? Sorry,
I said Colleen, but you can go, Keelan. Nope, it's fine.
No, Keelan, go.
No. Oh, okay. You want to go? Are we gonna rock paper scissor it?
Yeah, let's rock paper scissors. Well, my camera's not on.
You go.
Okay. I don't have a baseball one, but I will say Burley is in his last round of heartworm treatment this week.
Yay!
It is looking good that he will be able to go back to daycare and be a puppy again in the next couple weeks.
Aww, what a good boy.
He's a very good boy.
Proud of him.
He got all kinds of snacks today, and then I had to chase him around and try and give him a pill. That was less fun for me, but he enjoyed it.
Yes.
It's been a long road.
Yes.
Yeah. It's been a long time.
That heartworm is nasty business.
It is expensive business. Everybody get your dog heartworm treatments tested, all of the good things, because this is an expensive road to go down.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't imagine. All right, Keelan, what's your walk-off win?
Mine's also not baseball related. I'm excited to see Barbie.
Yes.
Are you doing the double feature Barbie and Oppenheimer?
Barbenheimer, yeah.
Barbenheimer.
Yes.
The government is so happy that Barbie's coming out at the same time, I will say. It's got to be.
Barbenheimer. Amazing. Yeah. I'm excited for you.
That's exciting.
Linda, what is your walk-off win for this week?
Well, thank you, Keelan, for doing that, because we're doing a Barbie day at work. So I get to dress up. I bought a hot pink dress and I'm wearing it to work.
Oh my goodness. Exciting. That's amazing.
That's so fun.
So I am so excited that we're doing Barbie day, and then I can do a Barbie story time.
I want to come to your work. Your work is more fun than mine.
Come, please. We're fun.
Libraries are the best.
Yes, we love libraries. Our libraries.
Yay for libraries. Woo.
Yay. Yes, Janice.
Advertising sucks. Go to your library instead.
Yes, go to your local library and support your local libraries, especially now because a lot of assholes are making our lives miserable. But this is a walk-off.
Yes. Go to your library. They have a Barbie day.
Yes, they have Barbie Day at Linda's library, so you should go.
Yes.
So my walk-off win for this week is a bit similar to Janice's in the sense that Michael and I did a baseball trip recently. We were in San Diego for the Mets Padres series. Thankfully,
went
to Friday's game, the only game that the Mets won.
Yeah.
So
that's because you were there. Obviously. Yeah.
Usually have pretty bad luck at in-person games. You can ask anybody who's been to many of the Mets Nationals. Games that I've been to, they have not done well in those games historically, despite the fact that the Mets David's have been better than the Nationals almost every year. But you know, but they did win the game that that we attended in San Diego. They didn't walk it off, they were the away team, but they won it in extra innings, which was awesome. It was a very fun game to be at. I enjoyed myself. Petco Park is beautiful. I really loved it. It was like probably one of my favorites of the ballparks that I've been to so far, along with PNC and Camden Yards. So it was absolutely wonderful. The whole San Diego trip was wonderful. We went to the zoo. We did Torrey Pines, the National Reserve. We did the beach. We did everything. And it was awesome. And it was exhausting. And, you know, I'm tired still. Even though I've been back for a while. But yeah, it was a really fun trip. And that is my walk-off win for this week.
I'm so jealous.
Yeah,
San Diego seems amazing.
The weather was incredible, and I had to come back to the East Coast humidity and be like, "Ugh, it's 90 degrees and humid. I hate this." It was
wildfire smoke.
Yeah, wildfire smoke. Yep, we've got that back in DC again. Yeah, it's awful. But yeah, the trip was awesome. I maybe saw the like last good Mets game of the year, so that's cool. Thank you all, ladies, for coming on. We really appreciate it. So, real quick, where can we find each of you on the internet? Crystal, you go first.
Yeah, I am just on Twitter, mostly at Crystal_OK. That's CHRYSTAL_OK. And then you can find a lot of things I do at Southside Sox, Willett's Pen, and Pitcher List.
Awesome. How about you, Janice? Where can people find your work and you online?
Yeah, so I am both on Twitter and the Good Weather app, aka Blue Sky. So my handle on both of those is Scuriosa, but Twitter has an extra I because someone named Solange, not Beyonce's sister, by the way,
has Solange.
Yeah.
Not that Solange, no, but apparently she's had my handle since 2012, and I can't get Elon to give that handle up. But otherwise, you can find my work at Southside Sox, Baseball Prospectus, and yeah, that's all for now.
Awesome. Colleen, how about you? Where can people find you on the internet?
I am also on that delightful Bluey weather app, and on Twitter. Is usually me just crabbing or live tweeting Vanderpump Rules lately. Both are my full name, so at Colleen Sullivan. And occasionally I am over at Willett's Pen, formerly at Southside Sox. You can still find some old shit I wrote over there, though. Usually making fun of the Royals. Also probably complaining about always making fun of the Royals, probably complaining about Tony La Russa in the archives. But yeah.
Awesome. How about you, Keelan? Where can people find you?
On Twitter, I am at Keelan underscore 12 foot, and it is K-E-E-L-I-N underscore 12 FT. And I think I'm the same thing other places. And I'm with Willits Pin, like everybody else here, and also with Razzball, and I do football and baseball for them.
Amazing. Y'all should check out these ladies' work. They are all fantastic writers, and they do a great job. So you can find this show and all of our fantastic pods on homerunapplesauce.com. You can go to patreon.com/homerunapplesauce to support our work. It really, really helps keep the lights on here and keep us employed. So please, if you have some spare change to throw our way, you can go to Patreon and support us. You can follow Home Run Applesauce on Twitter and Instagram at HR Applesauce. You can follow the show on Twitter and Instagram, and soon Blue Sky. I have a Blue Sky ready to go. It's not live yet, but it will happen at a pod of their own. Hopefully that's not taken on Blue Sky. It wasn't on Twitter, so it shouldn't be taken on Blue Sky. But you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at that same handle, at a pod of their own. You can find each of us on Twitter. I am at Petit PhD. Where are you, Linda?
At Linda Servage.
And Maggie is at Maggie162. And I think a couple of us are also on Blue Sky. I'm on Blue Sky at the same handle. Please rate and review the show if you listen to it on your favorite podcast app of choice. It really helps people find it. The original intro and outro music to this podcast is by Bunga. Let's go Mets. And White Sox when they're not playing the Mets. And don't forget, there is no crying in podcasts.